Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Jesus is the only Savior. He is the only way to heaven. Not just a way, not just one Savior, not just one path. He's the only one. Is that statement intolerant? Homosexuality is wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. It's not right in any way, shape, matter, or form. And so is abortion. Wrong. Are these statements intolerant? Am I trying to impose my morality on you? Maybe you feel like I am. Maybe you say, Wilkin, you're being intolerant. What does it mean to be tolerant? That's the subject of this evening's Issues Etc. Our guest joining us here in just a moment, Greg Kokel of Stand to Reason. If you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, our phone number is 1-800-730-2727. 1-800-730-2727. We also have that in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our guest, Greg Kokel, is founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. He's co-author of the book called Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. Greg, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hello, Todd. It's good to talk with you again.
Greg, if I say that Jesus Christ is the only Savior from sin, the only way to heaven, am I being intolerant?
Well, Todd, that depends entirely on what the definition of that word is. And in fact, this word has undergone a transformation in definition in the last 20 years or so. It used to mean one thing. It means something totally different now. The answer, of course, by today's definition is yes, that would be considered intolerant. The problem is, by today's definition, so would the judgment that the view that Jesus is the only way of salvation, that would be intolerant as well. In other words, for the Christian to claim what Christianity has always claimed, that Jesus is the only source of salvation, and have that called intolerant, would in like manner be an act of intolerance by the person who's claiming that of the Christian.
So when someone does make that accusation, you're being intolerant for claiming that Jesus is the only way of salvation, how should I respond?
Well, I would ask for a definition first off, and let me sketch this out by telling you something that happened to me. It's a really good illustration of this very thing we're talking about, because I realize some people might think my response was a little bit cryptic there at the beginning. But I was in your neck of the woods, actually, roughly in Iowa, early last year, in the snow last January, and I was speaking to a group of Lutheran kids in a Lutheran high school, as it turned out, a small group in their religion class, and I wanted to get at this issue of tolerance and try to cash this out a little bit and help them to see the shell game that was being played with this tolerance idea with Christians. And so I asked them what the definition of tolerance was, and as we worked on it for a little bit, they gave me what I think would probably be a fairly good contemporary definition of tolerance, and that definition is that all views are equally valid. So if we believe in the religious application of tolerance there, that all religious views are equally valid, and the Christian comes along and says, no, they're not, we're right, and the others are wrong, certainly by that definition, Christians would be intolerant. But there's a catch there. And I demonstrated the catch by writing these two sentences on the board. The first was the definition of tolerance that we'd all agreed on, that all views have equal merit, and none should be considered better than others, and that was kind of the basic definition. And then I wrote another sentence on the board that got a rise out of one of the students, actually got a rise out of a bunch of them. The sentence I wrote on the board underneath the first, which was the definition of tolerance, as people now understand it, the sentence I wrote underneath was this: Jesus is the Messiah, and Jews are wrong for rejecting him. Now, of course, I hadn't even got that on the board, Todd, and then the students realized where I was going, and a young lady in the corner of the room is frantically waving her hand In fact, she didn't wait to be called on. She just simply told me, you can't say that. That's, and what do you think the magic word was?
That's wrong.
That's, no, it's worse than that. That's intolerant.
Oh.
That's intolerant, okay? And of course, this is exactly what I wanted her to say by making the statement that I made. But she went beyond that. She said, how would you like it if people said you were wrong? I said, you mean like you're doing right now? And she didn't realize that in objecting to me saying others were wrong, she had to actually in the same breath be saying that I was wrong. And this is the key to this whole understanding, this whole shell game with the word tolerance. And so I went back to the board, and I, with these two sentences on it, the definition of tolerance, all views are equally valid, and the other sentence, Jesus is the Messiah and Jews are wrong for rejecting him, and I circled the first sentence. I said, is this a view, that all views are equally valid? Is that a view? And quickly, most people got it. Yes, it is a view. And then I circled the second sentence. Jesus is Messiah and Jews are wrong for rejecting him. And I said, is that a view? Long silence. And finally, they had to admit what the obvious, yes, the second claim was also a view. And they began to realize if tolerance is defined by in that all views are equally valid, then even the view that all views are not equally valid, the Christian view when it comes to religion, that would also be a valid view according to tolerance. The trick here is that if this is the right way to view tolerance, all views are equally valid, then nobody can be tolerant. It's a contradictory situation because you'd also say, you'd have to say that the contradiction of that statement, all views are not equally valid, or any claim to know that Christianity is the right true religion, for example, that would have to be equally valid as well. But of course nobody says that. They say that's a violation of tolerance, but how can they say it's a violation of tolerance only by saying that the Christian view is not valid, which means that would violate their definition? This just, if people are kind of screwing up their faces right now, Todd, thinking about what I've just said, I'm not surprised, because when you look closely at this way of dealing with tolerance, you realize that this is simply contradictory. It's the wrong definition. And so when people say you're intolerant because you believe Jesus is the only way of salvation, I ask them a simple question. Am I wrong? Now, what are they going to say? Of course, they think I'm wrong, right? But when they say I'm wrong, they are claiming that my religious point of view is in error, which is the very thing they're mad at me for saying about other people's religious point of view. And so my technique in every one of these situations is to put the question to them, to force them to define the way that they are using tolerance, which, as I mentioned earlier, is a distorted way of using the term, and then to show them that by their definition, which makes them feel justified in objecting to me, it turns out that they are just as intolerant as I am. Maybe another way of putting this, Todd, is when people say that as a Christian, I'm arrogant, and I always ask whenever anybody calls me a name like that, whether intolerant or arrogant or whatever else, you always ask for a definition. I say, what do you mean I'm arrogant? What? Because it could mean a couple different things. Now, if I'm acting arrogantly, well, that's not good, and I should be corrected for that. But that's not the objection. The objection isn't that I'm acting arrogantly, that like my style or my manner or my attitude is arrogant. It's that my claim is arrogant. So what's wrong with my claim? Well, you think that you're right and other people are wrong. And my response is, well, I do think I'm right. I could be mistaken, but I think I'm right on this. But let me ask you a question. The view that you have, contrary to mine, is your view right or wrong? Now, nobody's going to say, yeah, I have all these beliefs and views, and they're all wrong. They think that their view is actually correct. And, of course, once they say that, then I have a simple follow-up, and this really, in a sense, springs the trap. And that is, why is it that when I think I'm right, I'm arrogant, or intolerant, if you want to use that term? But when you think you're right, well, you're just right. You know, Why doesn't that make you arrogant when you think you're right? The key here, Todd, is everybody in the game thinks he's right, and his view excludes all views contrary to his view. It's just as simple as that. But only one side gets to get called intolerant, you and me.
Okay, with only 30 seconds, a thumbnail definition of true tolerance.
True tolerance is showing respect not for every idea, as if you're treating every idea equally, but rather treating every person equally. That is, you show respect for the individual, even though you might disagree or think the idea is wrong. And we can cast that out after break if you'd like.
So it sounds like, to this point, folks, tolerance requires, if there's going to be tolerance practiced between individuals, it requires that individuals disagree with one another. After all, why would I tolerate someone with whom I agree? Why would I want to tolerate their ideas? I would accept them rather than tolerate them, right? Let's see if we can get straight on what true tolerance is. And when we come back, another question for Greg. How would he respond if someone simply says, well, you're not right or you're not wrong. You're just, you have your truth, and I have my truth, and what's true for you is true for you, and I'm glad that you have found that crutch to lean on, but I have my truth as well. We're talking about tolerance. Greg Kokel, founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California, is our guest. He's also co-author of the book Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If Christian doctrine can be true or false, can Christian practice also be true or false? Is Christian practice always neutral? What's the relationship between Christian doctrine and Christian practice? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. You'll find answers to these questions in the latest edition of the Issues, Etc. Journal. I've written an article titled Doctrine and Practice, and you can receive a complimentary copy of the Issues, Etc. Journal by calling our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. I've also written an article on the Lord's Supper titled Responding to Real Absence Arguments. Plus, you'll find a list of tape and book resources on issues such as American evangelicalism, church history, biblical interpretation, and much more. Ask to receive a complimentary copy of the Issues, Etc. Journal, 1-800-737-0172. Folks, are you one of those people that you've got a grudge that you've held for a long time? You don't like to think about it. You certainly don't like to talk about it. You would avoid the issue more often than not because it's uncomfortable for you and you feel a little guilty about it at the same time. There's someone in your family that you haven't talked to or you find very difficult to talk to, and it's lasted a number of years, or maybe it's only lasted a week. Someone in your congregation, a fellow Christian there where you go to church, you don't, maybe you say hi, but there's been tension between the two of you for a long time, and it's unresolved. Something was said, something was done. It's not only unresolved, it's unforgiven. Folks, we have a resource for you. It's not pop psychology. It's not simple conflict resolution. It's not law-oriented principles on how to do this and how to do that. The book is called Confession and Forgiveness. It's about the gift that Christ has given to His church and to every Christian, the forgiveness of sins and the power to proclaim it to one another. The book is called Confession and Forgiveness. It's our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March, and you can have it by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040 is the number. Ask to receive our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness. You can also order the book online. Go to our Issues, Etc. website, issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and you'll find information there on how to order this new book. When you call or when you write, be sure to ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness. The cost of the book is $9.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Call tomorrow during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about tolerance. Greg, before the break, you mentioned that true tolerance consists in respect for persons, but discernment and judgment when it comes to ideas. Make that distinction for us. In fact, I'd ask you to expand just one more level on that. You have written at some length about distinguishing between persons, ideas, and behaviors
right.
when it comes to exercising genuine tolerance.
Right. Okay, let's get this definition of classical tolerance down, because my point in our first segment was to demonstrate that this twisted or distorted sense of tolerance, what Frank Beckwith, for example, my co-author in the book on relativism, calls liberal tolerance, that notion is simply contradictory, and though it acts as if all views are equally valid, it certainly doesn't hold that. Our view is not equally valid, and so it falls into contradiction. Excuse me, it does that because it's a twisted notion of tolerance, and we ought to restore the classical definition of tolerance. If you go to Webster's, for example, you'll find out that tolerance means to allow or to permit recognizing and respecting other people's beliefs and practices without sharing them, to put up with someone or something that is not necessarily liked. And when you look at that definition, you realize that genuine tolerance involves three elements. First, you permit something. The thing that you permit is a conduct or a point of view that one disagrees with. Yet, and here's the third element, you respect the person in the process. And this identifies a very key aspect of genuine tolerance, and that is that you have to disagree with somebody before you can tolerate him. And this is a very critical aspect here, because, as you mentioned, we don't tolerate people who share our views. I say to somebody, do you tolerate homosexuality? They say, yes, of course I do. Well, then I guess you think it's wrong. No, I don't. I think it's fine. I say, then you don't tolerate it. You agree with it. There's no room for tolerance when you agree with the behavior. Tolerance is reserved for those we think are wrong. And this essential element of tolerance, disagreement, has been completely lost, I think, in the modern distortion of this concept. And nowadays, if you think someone is wrong, you're called intolerant, which presents a curious problem, Todd. If you first have to think another is wrong in order to exercise true tolerance toward him, yet when you do think he's wrong, or you state that, then this brings the accusation of intolerance. It's a catch-22. And according to that approach, of course, true tolerance is impossible. What I'm suggesting is that tolerance focus in on how you deal with the person who may have behavior or ideas with which you disagree. And this then gives us, I think, what might be called three faces of tolerance. Okay, one is tolerance of persons. This could be called civility. You might equate this with the word respect when respect is accorded to an individual as opposed to his ideas. That's part of the classical definition, the freedom to express your ideas without fear of reprisal. Classically, when we talk about tolerance, we mean allowing people to share their point of view or whatever. We respect those people who hold different views by treating them courteously, allowing their views a place in the public discourse. And we may strongly disagree with their ideas, Todd. We might vigorously contend against them in the public square, but we still show respect for the persons in spite of the differences. And this is key. The respect here is accorded to the person. Now, whether his behavior should be tolerated, that is allowed, is an entirely different issue. And that's the second sense of tolerance, the liberty to act as one wants, tolerance of behavior. And it only takes a few moments of reflection to show that our laws demonstrate that a man can believe what he likes, and he usually has the liberty to express those beliefs, but he can't behave the way he likes. Some behavior is immoral. Some behavior is a threat to the common good. And rather than being tolerated, we restrict behavior by law. And in Lincoln's words, there's no right to do wrong. Okay, so we have tolerance of persons. We have tolerance of behavior. We also have to distinguish tolerance of ideas here. Tolerance of persons requires that each person's views get a courteous hearing, but not that all views have equal worth or equal merit or equal truth value. The view that no person's ideas are any better or truer than any other's is irrational and absurd. And when we argue that some views are false, some views are immoral, or some views are just plain silly, this does not violate any meaningful standard of tolerance. Now, the irony in this conversation, Todd, is those people who champion the modern distorted definition of tolerance, and this is the sense of tolerance that you hear all the time, they are actually massively intolerant. They don't tolerate everybody's point of view, as they say they do. They don't tolerate ours. And not only do they not tolerate it in terms of being willing to say it's wrong, which is what they say bothers them about our view, but they'll actually go a step further than we will. They will actually try, through intimidation and sometimes even with law, to silence the expression of our view, to censor us and not just censure us, as it were, not just to complain, say that what we're doing is mistaken, but they're trying to shut us up. And so they go way beyond what we're willing to do when claiming that other people's views are wrong. They want to silence us as well. Now, that has got to be and they will call us names, and they will mistreat us and whatever. Now, I'm not complaining that they do that to me. I'm not being a crybaby here, but I am pointing out that this so-called tolerance that they have now is not a tolerance of belief. It is ideas or a behavior or of persons. That is, there is no meaningful sense in which the modern sense of tolerance is tolerant at all. And we ought to get back to the genuine virtue of tolerance, in which we show respect for persons even though we disagree with them. We will restrict some behavior because some behavior is damaging to the common good. And we shouldn't be stopped from saying some ideas are just plain wrong.
When we come back from this break, we're going to have our guest, Greg Kokol, define postmodernism and relativism, sometimes known as pluralism, all this together when we come back from our break. Our guest is Greg Kokol. We're talking about tolerance. He's founder and president of Stand to Reason, based in Signal Hill, California. Now, you can check out the website for Stand to Reason. Simply go to our Issues Etc. website at issuesetc.org. Click on the links with regular guests, and you'll find a direct link to Greg Kokol and Stand to Reason. Or if you'd like to receive their free Solid Ground newsletter, call them 1-800-737-0172. That's our resource line. And we'll give you the phone number and mailing address for Stand to Reason. The courts of justice are there to protect our rights and to right the wrongs that occur between men. Should Christians take one another to court? What's the difference between conflict resolution and Christian reconciliation? Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March is called Confession and Forgiveness by Ted Kober. You can order the book online by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on the book, and you can even read an excerpt. Issuesetc.org, or order by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040. Now, when you call, be sure to ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness, 1-800-325-3040, weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues Etc.
God isn't finished teaching. When it comes to the Lord's Supper, the words of Jesus say it all. I'm Pastor Todd Wilkin. Today we continue the question, how can eating and drinking the Lord's Supper do such great things? You know, we could eat mountains of bread, and we could drink rivers of wine, and never receive a single benefit, were it not for those simple, unambiguous words of Jesus, take and eat, this is my body given for you, take and drink, this is my blood shed for you, for the forgiveness of your sins. The words of Jesus promise that when we eat and drink his body and blood, we eat and drink forgiveness and salvation. Now, can these words of Jesus ever be separated from the eating and drinking of his body and blood? No.
That wouldn't be the Lord's Supper as He has given it to us. Jesus gave us His body and blood to eat and drink, not to lock up in a safe, not to venerate or worship, not to leave unconsumed on the altar. The words of Jesus say it all. Take and eat, this is my body. Take and drink, this is my blood, for the forgiveness of your sins.
Francis Beckwith's new book begins with this sentence. In America today, we seem to think nothing of keeping the Book of Virtues and the Bridges of Madison County together on our coffee tables. Do you detect an inconsistency? I suppose it would depend on whether or not you are a relativist. What is relativism, and what challenges does relativist thinking present to Christianity? How is relativism linked to the issues of abortion, homosexuality, multiculturalism, political correctness, and tolerance? Beckwith and Gregory Kokel have co-written the book, Relativism: Feet Firmly Planted in Midair. You can order this stimulating book through the Ministry of Issues, etc. Use your MasterCard or Visa when you call the Issues, etc. resource line at 1-800-737-0172. Be sure to specify the name of the book, Relativism. It's yours for $16. The number again, 1-800-737-0172.
Issues, etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. However, we are not funded by the church body. We're also not affiliated with Lutheran Hour Ministries or the Lutheran Layman's League. Issues, etc. is supported by listeners like you. Please help support this worldwide outreach by making a gift this week. Our address, Issues, etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Thanks for your prayerful consideration. Next week on Issues, Etc., we're going to discuss American civil religion with Dr. David Adams of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis. One Nation Under God, In God We Trust, God Bless America. Is the God of American civil religion the God of Orthodox Christianity? We'll talk about it next week on Issues, Etc. with Dr. David Adams. Now, if you'd like to know what we'll be discussing on Issues, Etc. for the month of May, go to our website, issuesetc.org. There you'll find a list of topics and guests for the weeks ahead. While you're there, be sure to read several articles written by our guest in this hour, Greg Kokel, on the issue of tolerance. The website address again, issuesetc.org. We're talking about tolerance with Greg Kokel. He's our guest. Our phone number, if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, 1-800-730-2727. We have that in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The best callers or emailers during this next 90 minutes of Issues, Etc. will receive a complimentary copy of Greg Kokel's book called Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air, 1-800-730-2727. The email address, live here in studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Greg, I need you to define kind of the term that lurks behind much of what we're discussing here.
Okay.
Our culture has been called postmodern, and with that comes a lot of other terms to be defined as well. Mm-hmm. Get us started on that.
Yeah, postmodern means after modern, simply put. And what is meant by that term is that we are now in an era that is following a lengthy time of conviction based on Enlightenment ideas. The Enlightenment was a time of renaissance, of new discovery, and the idea that man, and especially his understanding of the world, in his understanding of the world, was somewhat limitless, and he would be able to conquer all. And it was the power of man's reason and the confident assertion that he had discovered truth that will lead him to new heights. The postmodern era is very different from that. There are many characteristics of postmodernism, but the one that is important for our discussion, if somebody wanted a thumbnail definition, it is an era in which there is no confidence that there is such a thing as truth. It's an era of radical skepticism. that all ideas are ultimately man-made and culturally determined and a function of one's community and their language. And so all so-called truth claims are relative to individual communities, linguistic communities, etc. And so one group has their truth, another group has their truth, a third group has their truth, and these may be different truths. That is, the ideas may contradict, but it doesn't matter because there is no ultimate truth to discover. It's just up to individuals, and this expresses itself in religion, in the area of religious pluralism, that all religious views are basically the same. It expresses itself in morality, in moral relativism, the idea that there's no objective right or wrong, that it's just a matter of either individuals or communities determining what is true for them. All of these things are part of this broad thing called postmodernism, but captured under this kind of one banner of there is no truth. And of course, Todd, you can see how dangerous this very prevalent point of view, and increasingly so, point of view is to Christianity, because Christianity claims to be the truth, and that Jesus is the truth. He is, in fact, the correct answer to a specific problem, that being sin, he being the Savior. And if there is no truth, then there is no truth of sin, then there is no truth of Saviors, there is no truth of Christ or of God. There are just different opinions about things. And if that's the case, then Christianity dies on the vine, as it were. It doesn't have any life left. Its feet are cut out from underneath it. Jesus said, I have came to bear witness to the truth, and if there is no truth in the sense that Jesus meant it, then Christianity is a sham.
Okay, I make my claim that Jesus is the only way of salvation.
Yes.
And someone responds, well, I'm glad you found something that works for you. That's true for you, but not for me. How should I respond?
Well, I invoke a question at this point, much like the question that I offered at the beginning of the program when somebody, as you offered, would say I was intolerant. I want to know what they mean by that, okay? Because I think behind all of these statements are serious problems, and I'm going to exploit them by getting them to talk more about it and clarify what they mean. So when they say you have, and maybe you can role play this with me a little bit so we can cash this out, when you say, you have your truth. That's good for you. My question is, what do you mean when you say, I have my truth? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that I have found a truth that works for me. It's not necessarily going to work for you, Greg, and it's not necessarily going to be true for you. It is true for me, but what's true for me may not be true for you. We kind of each discover our own truths.
So what you mean by truth, then, is that you think that you mean by truth that I believe it. This is something I believe and I practice, and that's what you mean by truth.
Yes, I believe it.
Okay, let me ask you a question. And again, this is part of the role play here. Can believing something make it true?
Well, all I know is that I believe this and it's true for me.
Okay, you didn't answer my question, though. Can believing something make it true?
No.
Okay, then believing something and it being true are two different things, right?
I guess so.
So when you say that it's your truth, that means you believe it, you're not really responding to what I'm claiming. You're changing what I'm claiming. I'm claiming that not only that I merely believe something, that I found something for myself, I'm actually claiming that what I discovered is true for everyone.
Well, now, Greg,
okay,
that's intolerant, Greg.
Pardon me?
That's intolerant.
Now I'm going to ask for the definition of intolerant. but see, this is the point here. I'm saying that what I'm believing, I actually think it's so. It is an actual truth of the world, as it were. Now, my question of you, as the one in opposition to my views, is simply this. Am I right or am I wrong? And don't say that it's true for me again, because now we're back, you're talking in circles, because believing something can't make it true.
Well, you have claimed that you have I'm role-playing here, Greg.
Yes,
you have claimed you have a universal truth, a universally binding truth.
Yes.
And I would say that claim is wrong.
Okay, so my view is false. Now, it's very interesting where you've just found yourself. The essence of your response to me is not the tolerant, oh, it's true for you and you can believe it and all that's wonderful. Underneath all of that verbiage it turns out that you don't think I'm right at all. You think I'm actually wrong, and you can patronize me with this little language about it's true for you to make you sound tolerant, but you actually think my view is mistaken. That is progress, actually, when you can get to this point, because it points out that we both have a point of view that we think is true. Yours, that that religious pluralism is true, for example, or mine, that Jesus is the only way. Okay, now we've gotten somewhere. Now we both have a claim on the table. Now we can ask the question, why do you think pluralism is actually true? And I'll talk to you about why I think Jesus is the only way is actually true. Now we're into a meaningful discussion. And sometimes the hardest part of these conversations, Todd, is to get down to something you can really work with instead of having people play word games with you. And this is precisely why I ask the questions the way I do, and I use the questions to what might appear to box you in the role play that we offered here, Todd, because people need to be boxed in before they can start talking sensibly instead of talking foolishly. When somebody says, oh, that's true for you, what they really mean underneath that is the claim as it stands is false, but I'll let you believe it as long as you act like it only applies to you. And I don't want them to get away with that kind of passive-aggressive nonsense, and I want to graciously engage them in questions to flush out their true feelings so we can get the actual claims on the table, and then we can talk about why a person is convinced that all religions are equally valid. And now we've got something to work with.
Let's go to the phones, 1-800-730-2727. Dan is calling from Santa Rosa, California, listening on KFAX. Dan, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Greg. You write in the plain truth, and I really appreciate that because that's a member of the denomination I'm a member of.
Great.
My question, I'm looking at a Merriam-Webster student dictionary, and I'm kind of wondering how what you're saying sneaks into dictionaries. And it, under intolerance, it says, one, unwilling to endure. Number two, are unable to endure. And then number three, it says, unwilling to grant equality, freedom, or other social rights, bigoted. Is that what they're accusing us of?
Well, that you can see, I wonder what the date of that is, because now you see some of the, now you see some of a politicized definition of tolerance creeping into Webster's dictionary there. And of course that's going to happen because definitions of words, language, is conventional. That is, the people decide at any given time what words mean. And words do change meaning over time. Just take the word gay, for example. I do remember a time when gay didn't mean homosexual, but it does now almost universally. In fact, gay as happy is never used anymore. The word has changed the meaning. And I'm pointing out in these definitions that the use of the word tolerance has changed its meaning over time, and this is nefarious because the word tolerance is a connotation word. And what I mean by that is it not only has a dictionary meaning, it also has a kind of a feeling to it. Like there's a different sense between skinny and slim, you know. Nobody wants to be skinny, but everybody wants to be slim, you know, or slender or something like that. The same way tolerance has a good feel about it, the word does. Now, it has a good feel about it precisely because of what it used to represent in definition. Now, when we change the definition, when you actually see the way modern-day tolerance works its way out, it isn't as good as it used to be. It is actually used to repress ideas.
We've got about 30 seconds here.
Okay, Greg. Thank you. It repress ideas. So people can use the new definition but capture the same old sense of the word, and this is... So it sounds like it's good, but it's bad. And this is what happens in the dictionary. Now you see this politicized definition creeping in, and this is exactly what people mean when they say that we're intolerant.
Greg Kokel is our guest. We're talking about tolerance when we come back. Well, usually among Christians, this will eventually come up, especially among Christians who've bought into the postmodern notions that all truths are relative. They'll say, didn't Jesus say, judge not lest you be judged? Sounds like a trump card, especially when you're quoting Jesus. We'll find out how Greg would respond right after this. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. Give us a call.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Is private confession and absolution a Roman Catholic practice? Did you know that Martin Luther called this practice a third sacrament? And how can this practice help resolve conflict in the church? You'll find answers to these questions with the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March, Confession and Forgiveness. The book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book on our website, issuesetc.org, and click the What's New section, issuesetc.org. Confession and Forgiveness is written by Ted Kober of Peacemaker Ministries, a Christian reconciliation organization. The book costs $9.99 plus shipping and handling. Confession and Forgiveness, our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House. That number, 1-800-325-3040.
If you'd like to receive a complimentary copy of our Issues, Etc. journal, or if you'd like to know how to contact Greg Kokel, our guest, and Stand to Reason, or if you'd like to make a Lenten donation to Issues, Etc., call our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, or write us at Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Now, for any size gift to Issues, Etc., between now and the end of April, we'll send you our interview with Dr. Robert Kolb on the humiliation of Christ and an interview with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on answering the objections to the bodily resurrection of Christ. For a gift of $50, we'll send you these two programs and our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for March called Confession and Forgiveness. For a contribution of $100, we'll mail you our seven-part series with Pastor Tom Baker on a theology of glory versus a theology of the cross. And for a gift of $250 or more to Issues, Etc., we'll mail you each of these premiums and Dr. Paul Meyer's book called The Very First Easter. The phone number again, 1-800-737-0172. The mailing address, Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Please prayerfully consider making a donation to Issues, Etc. during this season of Lent while it lasts. 1-800-737-0172, our address, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Let's go back to the phones. Robert is calling from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, listening on WEMI. Robert, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you very much. I had a question for the doctor. I was wondering if you could explain postmodernism and realism just a little bit more, because I am a Wells, Wisconsin Synod member, and I am studying communications here at a local campus. And the thing is, we've studied it where we've come up with the idea that, you know, there is one truth to one person, and that would be what that person can base on their life experiences. And until someone's gone through something, they won't be able to, you know, tell us what they would do in a certain situation. Like, example would be the 9/11 instance, where people would say, you know, if I was on that plane, I would do this, I would do that. And my opinion on everything was, well, I would love to say that I would do that, but I cannot tell you. And I pray I would have said, let's roll, and I would have been right there with them. But until I'm right there doing it, I just can't answer that.
All right, Robert, let's see what Greg has to say.
Yeah, Robert, help me. Well, maybe we can talk a little bit back and forth on this, because I want to. There's some confusion, I think, in the way that you and your friends have been talking about this issue. When we claim that there is truth, we are simply saying that there's some things that you can know with deep enough justification to be able to claim that they're actually so. For example, it's a truth that I exist. It's a truth that I'm sitting here at this desk on this radio show. It is a truth that I'm married to a woman named Steese, and she's in the next room. I mean, these are all truths. It's truth that red is a color. I mean, there's all kinds of things that I can claim that are actually so. Now, one thing that I can't really claim as a truth is what I might do under the circumstances that people experienced in 9/11. But since we can't know how we would act in the future, doesn't mean that there aren't some things we can know in the present. And this is where we need to be careful about how we talk about it. People want to reduce these truth claims just to simply what you think in the moment and what or what you think you might do in the future. And these aren't the kinds of things we're talking about. All I'm claiming is that there are some things that can be known, and in fact, it's hard to avoid those kinds of things. If a person says, no, you can't know anything for true, for sure, then my question is going to be, do you know that? They think they do. That's why they're saying it, right? Right, Robert?
Right. I absolutely agree. And the wonderful service that I heard today, we also did bring up the conversation of this postmodernistic age and how one person's truth is an entirely different matter than someone else's.
Well,
but the thing I keep questioning is my religion. You know, I was born and raised Wisconsin Synod, and I went to Lutheran grade school, high school, and we were taught, you know, the Buddhist religion. We were taught what Judas believe about this topic.
Yeah.
But I just can't see where a Lutheran preacher, Lutheran pastor that has been born and raised again, and all they've been taught really is the Wells Synod, how they can teach what these Judas believe or what the Muslimic religion believes, and how, you know, I just don't view it as they're not educated enough to teach me about that. And
okay, well, right. They may not be educated enough to teach you about other religions, but it doesn't mean they're not in a good position to tell you about what Christianity teaches and give you reasons to believe that Christianity is actually true. There's one thing that you need to be careful of, and this comes up a lot, and I understand why you expressed yourself this way, but you have to, I want to encourage you to quit talking about one person's truth. It would be better to talk about, because that misuses the word truth, it'd be better to talk about one person's belief and then talk about whether a person's belief is true or false. But when you say one person's truth, that just simply is muddled thinking or muddled ways of talking about it because it implies that everybody's belief is a truth, and since people have different beliefs, then they have different truths. No, people have different beliefs, and some beliefs are true and some beliefs are false. And we should spend our attention trying to figure out what of those beliefs are well justified, so much so that we can say they're true, and which ones are false. And this is the whole question of religious pluralism. What religious claims are actually defensible and which ones are not?
Okay, Greg, with 2 minutes to answer, someone's going to say, people do say all the time, Jesus said, judge not lest ye be judged. And that pretty much trumps everything you've said so far about absolute truth and how we are to discern it.
Okay, the key here is not what Jesus said when you take a slice of his discourse, but what he meant by that. And you can only figure out what he meant by that by looking at the context in which he said those things. I might ask the person, why is he quoting Jesus to begin with, you know? But in any event, Matthew 7 is where you find this, the first few verses. Do not judge, lest you be judged. And then he tells you why. He says, why do you look at the speck that's in your brother's eye? You don't notice the log that's in your own eye. How can you say to the brother, take the speck out of your eye and the log's in your own eye? He says, you hypocrite. First, take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. He does not condemn the judging, per se. He condemns a certain type of judgment, a hypocritical judgment, in which you are guilty more so of the thing you're judging the other person for. He does say, though, once you've repaired your problem, then you will be able to. The irony, that is, further the judgment. The irony is that Jesus was, by these standards, among the most judgmental people. And it's kind of funny, you know, that's why I ask, why are you quoting Jesus? And if Jesus is worth listening to, why is it that you only think one verse in the Bible is really worthwhile? Judge not, lest you be judged. Jesus said all kinds of things that are very judgmental in character. In fact, it is his claim that we as Christians are defending when we say that Christianity is the only way. When we say that Jesus is the only way, we are saying what he said himself. And so if people have a beef, they should take it up with Jesus. Jesus was not the non-judgmental person. In fact, he was quite judgmental of all kinds of error, both moral and religious.
Folks, if you'd like to receive a free tape of this 2-hour broadcast on tolerance for yourself, or perhaps for a friend or a relative or a coworker who has accused you from time to time of being intolerant, you can contact the local church that sponsors Issues, etc. They'll send you a free cassette recording of this broadcast. Get a pen and a piece of paper ready, because you're probably going to hear an announcement with a phone number and a mailing address for that sponsor right after the Issues Etc. close theme. We will be continuing this discussion on tolerance live in the next hour on the Internet. You can join us by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Click on the worldwide KFUO logo, and you'll be able to hear our continuing conversation with Greg Kokel on tolerance, issuesetc.org. We'll also be taking your phone calls for Greg in the next hour, 1-800-730-2727. We will let you stay on the line to hear the response to your question or your comment in the next hour, 1-800-730-2727. That email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The best callers in the next hour will receive a complimentary copy of Greg Kokel's book called Relativism, Feet Firmly Planted in Mid-Air. 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Sunday evening, March the 23rd. Write down our number, 1-800-730-2727. Now, if you've been accused of being intolerant, or if you'd like some advice on the art of Christian debate, give us a call. 1-800-730-2727 or issuesetc@kfuo.org. Could there be a more, at least by the modern definition, a more intolerant statement than I am the way, the truth, and the life? No one comes to the Father but by me. That statement, whether it's made by Jesus or by us on his behalf, will be considered intolerant. But rest assured, dear Christian friends, it isn't intolerant. It's a very tolerant question. It declares all other ways to be wrong. They're there, they're recognized, those who espouse them are respected, but those other ways are wrong. Jesus is the only way. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen to Pastor Todd Wilkin weekly on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. Visit us this week on the World Wide Web. Our website address, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.